Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with another UFC pay-per-view. I'm so glad. These Apex events honestly drain me. Some of our other fight nights with crowds even just don't look that superior. It's nice to see pay-per-views out there in the world. And this one is not the most stacked, obviously. Headlined by Alexander Pantoja, your current men's flyweight champion. And the number 10 ranked Steve Ursig. They had to get the number 10 guy in the division as no one was really available. There's some other good fights on here. This is a Brazilian fight fan card. 14 fights, 14 Brazilian fighters in action, including in the co-main event, the return of Jose Aldo. We are without a doubt going to be breaking down every single fight on the card and dropping our official predictions. And we're coming off of a 7-6 week, so it wasn't too bad. But I do prefer to be at my highest level of picking abilities to kind of earn some credibility. As well, going to kind of be talking about my life recently, just probably going to be getting to that right after a little spiel about everything going on. As well, we're going to check in with the NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs and see what teams have advanced and which teams have been eliminated, if you want to put it like that. As well as we're going to mention some new UFC fights. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into episode 89. I mean, are you guys kidding me? Episode 89 of the podcast. It's crazy how far we've come. It's crazy where we're going. I'm excited for it all. But yeah, my life, Zachary Ruger, of course, the host, the man whose voice you listen to every single time an episode comes out. I mean, I'm pretty excited. I landed an internship for the summer in marketing. $18 an hour isn't too shabby. I'll take it. I'm going to be at Rapid Packaging. Going to be very interesting. I'm going to get some hands-on experience with marketing, maybe even a little sales, just the whole shebang with this company. And they're very cool. My interview went great. The people seem amazing. And I'm excited to get that kicked off. They're actually emailing me an offer letter. And I think I sent it to my home in Lionel Lakes, Minnesota. So I'll need to make sure that I get that and let them know, hey, I'm more than happy to join you guys for an internship this summer. So that's super exciting. My junior year coming to an end, best year by far, every semester just gets better and better and better, and I think that's amazing. I know as a freshman, I was like, what is the college experience? What's it all going to be like? And as I go into my senior year in about three to four months, I mean, I'll just say that it is, I think everyone should go to college. And I know some people say like, oh, you know, you don't need college to learn. I know, but you learn a lot of other skills along the way. You learn how to take care of yourself. You learn how to be responsible. You learn how to interact with people. I mean, my interpersonal skills are through the roof since going to college, and I think that's one thing that I will be happy that I took away. Let's see, what else has been going on? Nothing too much. I figured actually that I would drop my rankings for all the classes that I took this semester. I know that I've done in the past a ranking of every single class I've ever taken. I'm thinking before senior year, like I'm talking the episode, like the week prior, we go through and do an official ranking of every single class. But for now, we're going to rank all six classes that I took this past semester. And I'm going to be brutally honest with you guys, this was a tough semester. This was one of my toughest, if not the toughest semester to date. I liked a couple of these classes, a couple I'm glad they're over. Let's just get right on into it with the number six, my least favorite class that I took, and that was Principles of Microeconomics. This was essentially just homework assignments every single week. All just learning about economics, and it was just not for me. Economics is not for me, and I get it. There's an audience out there for economics, but I don't really want to say I didn't learn anything, because I did learn stuff in regards to economics, but it's boring to me. Personally boring. I had one other friend in my class, and we did assignments, our finals together, our homework, tests. But I mean, other than that, just not really enjoyable. I won't miss it. And it was online. Sometimes with these online classes, it's hard to really get that connection that you get with other ones. So it lands at number six. And you know, it's honestly not my least favorite, like out of the six, because there actually is one that's probably my least favorite. But just in regards to ranking the classes, it's probably at six. Coming in at number five, I'm actually going to go with consumer behavior. This one started out promising. You know, teachers seemed nice. Class was super into it. And just the numbers dwindled about who was coming to class. The teacher just, no one really cared what she had to say. I wasn't really learning anything in the class. It was really me having to teach myself, which was annoying. And sure, it was great to know about consumers' behavior and how we are as consumers, especially here in America and around the world. But it was just kind of, you know, eventually just became, you know, I'd do a discussion post, I'd watch a video, take a little quiz afterwards, and then I just, you know, take an exam, and you can Google the answers if you want, and then, you know, there's me where it's like, I'm like, okay, I'm trying to take this exam and use all the knowledge that I remember, and then I'm kind of like, but why am I not using the internet? Why am I not using a source that can get me a better grade? And oftentimes I would end up using the internet, Googling stuff, and it would pay off for the best and I'd get a better grade. And then that just kind of draws into what is better? What is better, you know, failing when you are trying to remember everything or using resources and getting the best grade possible? That's something that I've learned to deal with. And honestly, I kind of like to go with the better grade to keep that GPA high. It's at a 3.73, and I'm hoping we can keep it up there in the 3.5 range or even above. But consumer behavior, you land at 5. Coming in at number 4, our almost halfway point, essentially the halfway point, we're going to go with managerial accounting. And this class was just exactly what you think it is. Accounting, managerial style. I mean, accounting in general is not for me. You know, it's a lot of work, a lot of math. Got to remember a lot of equations, the accounts and stuff. And I've learned I'm just not going to be an accountant. I will hire accountants, you know, assist accountants, but I will never be an accountant. Okay, I don't need to manage accounts. A lot of math. The teacher was kind of all over the place. She kind of was, when I'm in class, she's kind of just like going through a full problem. And she's like, wait, I actually did this wrong. And everyone just kind of looks around, rolls their eyes. I mean, I didn't even speak in this class. It was boring. But like I said, you know, it was in person. Towards the end of the semester, I was really starting to nail it. And actually, I have my final coming up for it tomorrow. Actually, when you listen to this, it'll be today. So wish me luck. We'll see how I did. But, you know, it's going to land at 4. It's going to land at 4. But you know what? It's a respectful 4. I respect that I had to work hard to earn a good grade in the class. I'm hoping I get a good grade. I think I'm at a high B, low A right now. How about we keep that up to an A with our final exam? That'd be beautiful. Checking in at number 3 is Principles of International Business. This was without a doubt my least favorite class. But why does it land at number 3? It's because I had a friend in there. Okay, I had a friend in that class. And it really taught me how to study. It was also interesting. You know, some aspects of this were interesting. Others weren't. But learning how international business is, I mean, it certainly has... I'm going to keep in mind some things if I'm ever in another country doing business, which I kind of hope to do. That'd be super exciting, going overseas to kind of meet with other people to get business done. And it was very weird format. It was all online work. You know, the professor was sending emails out. Like, we weren't even getting updates on their official D2L site. Our exams were in person. They were proctored. And it was almost so hectic. I almost just had to laugh and go, I have no idea how I'm sitting at a high B, low A right now. I'm actually at 89.98%. So we have one 100-point assignment that's going to be graded, and that will make or break me getting a B or an A. So I'm super nervous. It was a group project, too, which I love. I had my group. Oh, my gosh, yeah, I had group members in that class, and I loved meeting those three people. They were all so fun. It's always great when you get along with people in your group. I'll say that. If you don't get along with people in your group, it's usually not enjoyable. So it lands there at number 3, but it was probably my least. I don't even know how to describe my mind when I say that. Like, why is it 3, but it was my least favorite? It was kind of just the hecticness of our professor and his weird style of grading. Made me not like it, but everything else, you know, respectful. Coming in at number 2 is actually an all-online class, Business Ethics. This was all writing papers. This was all writing discussion posts, reflections, and stuff. But it was really interesting to learn about ethics and kind of that there's always two sides to every story. And I had to write a giant paper on whistleblowing and the freedom that comes with that and the caution and why it should be protected as my final paper. And it was super interesting learning about all about that. And this was a lot of writing. And you know what? I like writing, but eventually got to a point where every week I have to write a 2-page assignment, then I have to write a 350-page discussion post, respond with 100 words to two other students, and then I also have to take a quiz. I mean, it was so much work, but I was actually intrigued with what I was learning. And I think that's important, that when something's intriguing you, that you give it, I don't really want to say priority over other things, but maybe something in that regard. It was something. It was over, and it was also online. I saw that. I say that's a negative, but it comes in at number two because I'm just ranking it because I can, and that's what I'll do. Which brings me to my number one class, my favorite class, and it is definitely going to be in the top 10, dare I even say top 5 or 3 classes of all time, professional selling. My professor, Professor Shandu Valuri, I mean, he is my, gotta be the best professor I've ever had. This guy is amazing. He understood students and what they wanted from a class. You know, he was super engaging when he was in the classroom. He was giving personal experiences. He rearranged one of our quizzes because it was the day after the Super Bowl. And he was like, I don't really want to have this quiz this day. How about we move it? He was amazing. He was so likable. An entrepreneur himself. He owns his own food truck business, I believe. This guy has done it all. Great at selling. And we had to do a mock sales presentation to kind of end the class, our big final assignment. And I absolutely nailed it. I did great. He said it was one of the best he's ever heard. Absolute confidence booster. And he said, without a doubt, Zach, I know you will be in sales, which is, I'm kind of like, I'm trying to avoid sales all I can. I don't know why. I don't really have a personal vendetta against sales, but I just like don't really want to go into it. But I'm hearing from my dad, I'm hearing from people I'm meeting, like my professors, even just everyday people, that I'm good at selling. I'm good at selling myself. So I'm starting to think, guys, that I may be going into sales in the foreseeable future, but we'll see. And I mean, just, I had some friends in this class. One of my good buddies was in here, and it was, I just enjoyed it. Professional selling is super interesting. We had some great guest speakers. Actually, one of the kids that came in, he was like an intern the year prior. I actually saw him at the bar, and I was like, hey, weren't you coming in with Northwestern Mutual, bringing stuff up? He's like, oh my gosh, yeah, I remember you. I was like, that's just comedy. Just comedy is all I can say. But yeah, that's essentially my semester. It was fun, a dimmed down version. We could obviously go more in depth, but I learned everything in all my classes. I learned more and more every single year. And I have an internship, which is going to count for credits. That's going to be one thing. I'm going to be taking a class over the summer, business statistics. That sounds just disgusting. I don't even want to think about that. And then I believe I have 9 or 10 classes. I think 10 to round out my college career. So that's pretty exciting. Pretty neat when you look at it like that. But yeah. Yeah, I think that's enough about me, about my class schedule, and all that. I say we get into the bread and butter of this, which is some UFC, and we haven't had too many new fights, any updates in that regard. I will say the rankings did update, the UFC rankings officially updated, and fresh off of his win, Alex Perez is now ranked number 5, jumping 3 spots in the men's flyweight division. However, it is very odd as the man who beat him in March, Muhammad Mokaev, is now below him, which realistically makes zero sense. I don't know why they did that. I guess Muhammad Mokaev had a boring win over him, and Alex Perez had this crazy knockout of Matthias Nicolau. But logically, it doesn't even make sense. So Alex Perez is at 5, Muhammad Mokaev at 6. Minot Cape drops down to 7. He just hasn't fought since September. And Matthias Nicolau, after getting knocked out cold, is now down 3 spots to 8. Sumadarji moves up from 15 to 14 as David Jork drops down to 15, which is fascinating. That's the flyweight division. Actually, speaking of the flyweight division and the man who just got a knockout, Alex Perez has signed a fight for UFC Vegas 93 on June 15th to fight the number 12 ranked Tagir Ulanbekov. This guy, Alex Perez, I mean, come on. Loses to Devison Figueiredo in 2020, okay? Loses to Alexander Pantoja in 2021. Loses to Brandon Royval in 2022. Takes 2023 off, right? Has so many fight cancellations. Comes back, gets beat by Muhammad Mokaev, all right? Everyone's kind of like, yeah, Alex Perez, he's absolutely washed. takes a fight against Matthias Nicolau on short notice, knocks him out cold. 2 days later, accepts a fight against Taguirolin Bekov. This guy's a killer. Alex Perez, I'm your fan. Obviously, the Taguirolin Bekov fight will be tough. Taguir is a tough, tough opponent. 15-2 professionally, 4-1 in the UFC. Trains at AKA with the Dagestani boys, Islam Khabib, Daniel Cormier even. So he's legit as they come, I'll say. Beware of his abilities. But, I mean, just all kudos to him. All kudos to him. In the men's pound-for-pound rankings, Israel Adesanya is now up to 11, and Tom Aspinall is up to 12, as Charles Oliveira drops down to 13. I will say it's weird Charles Oliveira is in the pound-for-pound when Armin Tsarukyan beat him. I get it was by split decision, but the pound-for-pound is super screwy. I think everyone's kind of realized that it makes no sense. So, I mean, I don't even think we need to give it the light of day, if I'm being honest. The men's bantamweight division had some changes. Jonathan Martinez moves up from 13 to 12. I'm sure they were trying to get him as high as they could as he fights Jose Aldo this weekend. Mario Bautista now down to 13. Ricky Simon up to 14. Pedro Munhoz down to 15. Ricky Simon has a fight coming up against some random unranked guy. I completely forgot his name. Pedro, Mario, I don't know what they're doing, but I'm assuming they'll have some fights coming up. In the featherweight rankings, Edson Barboza passes Bryce Mitchell from 12 to 11. Edson has a big fight with he's actually unranked now, Lerone Murphy. Diego Lopez took his spot. I'm excited. Diego Lopez, actually, the star-studded guy, comes in the UFC last year, has just ran through everyone he's fought, and just knocked out Sadiq Youssef in under a minute and a half, got fined like $3,000 or $9,000 for jumping over the cage after his victory. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, Commission, the NSAC in Nevada? An absolute joke. It just pisses me off. And even Armin Tsarukyan, the number one ranked lightweight in the world, right? The number one contender, I should say, got fined $31,000 for punching a fan who flipped him off. The fan even said, I don't want to press any charges. I want tickets to UFC 303. And the commission said, no, we're fining you. So the fan doesn't even get justice. Armin gets no justice. And the commission just takes his money. It's an absolute joke. Can't even believe it. Men's light heavyweight rankings is where the final changes took place, fresh off of his knockout of Ryan Spann. Speaking of which, Ryan Spann drops down 4 spots to 15. Bogdan Gustov, the freaking boy from Kyrgyzstan, is back in the rankings at number 12. Actually, I shouldn't say back in. He's officially in the rankings. So happy for you, Bogdan. So happy for you. He looks like an orc. He looks like an orc from the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He's absolutely hilarious. Alonzo Menfield up to 11. He has a fight coming up with Carlos Ulberg, actually. But Bogdan, what to do next with Bogdan ranked at number 12? I'm seeing potentially the winner of Vitor Petrino and Anthony Smith who fight this weekend. Something like that, maybe even a Johnny Walker fight. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of options out there. So I'm excited to see what's next for a bunch of these fighters. As we all know, actually, that UFC 304 is taking place in Manchester, England, in the UK, this summer. And actually, Curtis Blaydes just passed Stipe Miocic from the 5th spot to the 4th spot. I'm thinking we might be getting an interim title defense by your current interim champion, Tom Aspinall, who is from the UK, and he could be potentially rematching the only man to beat him, Curtis Blaydes. And by the way, Curtis, only reason he got a win over him is because Tom, like, hurt his knee. So, I mean, it's not even a real official win. Curtis doesn't consider it a win. I'm ecstatic. I'm ecstatic to see what happens next. But that's kind of all the new UFC news that we have to really pick at. I'm sure we're going to get some more as the fights for the summer continue to roll out, but that's all we got for the moment being. Moving into our next segment, which of course is checking in with the NBA playoffs, and we have had numerous amount of teams move on to the second round. They've all been from the West, though. We know 3 of the 4 teams that are moving to the quarterfinals, or the conference semifinals, then you have your conference finals, then the NBA finals. But I mean, congratulations to these 3 teams, starting us off with the Thunder. They sweep the Pelicans with ease. With ease, they're the number one team. They're just dominant. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander averaged 27.3 points, 6 rebounds, and 5 assists through the 4-game stretch. Impressive stuff. I mean, no game was really close except game 1. Thunder won by 2. They won game 2 by 32 points. They won game 3 by 21 points, and they won game 4 by 8. So, Very easy work for the Thunder. Impressive stuff. Averaged 105 points. Averaged less rebounds than the Pelicans, but more assists, which I find pretty fascinating. Good work. Series leaders, I mean, is there anything for rebounds or anything that I can look at? Most blocks went to Chet Holmgren. He averaged 2.8. Most rebounds went to Jonas Valanciunas of the Pelicans. He averaged 11 per game. Now, that is impressive. That is impressive, if you ask me. Chet Holmgren averaged 8. But yeah, I mean, Thunder just had their number. Had their number. When it comes to a lot of the categories, the Pelicans are actually taking better free throw percentage. They had less turnovers. They had more steals. But at the end of the day, you just weren't as good as the Thunder. They will play the winner of the Clippers and Mavericks series. That series is currently tied at 2-2. Game 5 is actually tonight at 9 o'clock Central Time. How's that series looking? Actually, how is that series looking? James Harden currently averaging 26 points per game. But Luka Doncic, ladies and gentlemen, averaging 29 points per game, averaging 9.8 rebounds per game, averaging 8.5 assists per game. Dude, oh man, he could win MVP. He could win MVP, and I would not be mad in the slightest. Clippers are actually averaging 0.7 more points. Mavericks are averaging 1.8 more rebounds, and Clippers are averaging 1.5 more assists. It's coming down to the wire. It's coming down to the wire. Mavericks took Clippers took game one. Mavericks took game two. Mavericks took game three. Clippers took game four. They've all been pretty close. They've all been within an 11 to kind of 5-point range. I'm excited to see who pulls through. And we also have a rematch of last year's opening round. I mean, the Nuggets are just making, they're just kind of clearing everyone out like they did before. As the Timberwolves and Nuggets will meet in the conference semifinals. They met in the first round last year, 4-1 to the Nuggets. But both teams, you know, coming in with some momentum. Timberwolves, we swept the Suns. Nuggets beat the Lakers 4-1. Let's check in with the 3-seeded Timberwolves. My Timberwolves. And I mean, light work. Light work is all I'm going to say. You know, we no competition. No competition from the Suns. Were the wins easy? No, we had to work. We had to work our asses off to get it done. But it all paid off. It all paid off, and I was more than satisfied with it. Taking game 1 by 25, game 2 by 12, game 3 by 17, and game 4 by 6. Anthony Edwards averaged 31 points per game. I mean, is this the next Michael Jordan? Could this be the next Michael Jordan? If Anthony Edwards, in his, I believe, third year in the league, takes this team to the freaking NBA Finals and wins nonetheless, he could very be the next Michael Jordan, the next Kobe Bryant, the next LeBron James. He's got so much momentum. Timberwolves averaged 118 points per game, 46 rebounds per game. Impressive as it comes. How did our rebounders do? I'm curious to know how Rudy Gobert averaged 11. Love to see that. Love to see that. Anthony Edwards averaging 6.3 assists. Devin Booker averaged 27.5 points per game, but not enough. Not enough in the slightest. Timberwolves are just too good. They're too good. I think Edwards had a 40 bomb in there. I think he dropped 40 points in one game. I'll be rooting for the Timberwolves, but it's no easy roads, guys. It's no easy roads as we play the current reigning champion, the Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets handled the Lakers accordingly. Now, was it an easy series? Not at all, which gives me hope. Game 1, they won by 11. Okay, game 2, only by 2 points. Game 3, with the Lakers at home, the Nuggets only won by 7. Lakers were able to win game 4, avoiding being swept by 11, and then they lost by 2 the other night to officially lose. Anthony Davis, 27 points per game, 15.6 rebounds per game. He played his heart out. Anthony Davis left it all out there, and, you know, obviously LeBron is the GOAT, but Davis is probably the best player on this team. It's absolutely incredible. Series averages, I mean, 108 for the Nuggets, 106 for the Lakers, pretty close. 46 rebounds per game for the Nuggets, 40 for the Lakers, 27 assists for the Nuggets, it's pretty impressive. Nikola Jokic, 28.2 points per game, 16.2 rebounds per game, and 9.8 assists. I mean, a triple-double merchant. It is insane. It is insane the numbers that he puts up. LeBron averaged 8.8 assists. Davis had 1.6 blocks per game. What are you gonna do? I don't really know where the Lakers go from here. I know LeBron still dreams of playing with his son, but he's a realistic man. He knows his body's growing old. I think the Lakers are going to start to turn into the Lakers of a decade ago, where nothing really worked for them. They lost a lot. We'll see what happens, but I wish them nothing but luck. And as for Nuggets, I wish you no luck. I hope you lose to the Timberwolves, because I'm rooting for the Timberwolves. But my prediction for Clippers and Mavericks, I'm rooting for the Mavericks. I don't really care for the Clippers. I'm a fan of Luka Doncic. Fun things ahead. In the East, I mean, no one's moved on yet. You know, Celtics lead the Heat 3-1. They have a game. When do they have a game? Tonight, actually. Cavaliers and Magic, they're currently tied. Or no, Cleveland won the other night. 3-2 lead for the Cavaliers. They'll play Friday, with a chance for the Cavaliers to advance. Bucks currently are down 3-2 to the Pacers. Six-seeded Pacers lead the series 3-2. And the two-seeded Knicks are only up a game on the 76ers, 3-2. We'll do a quick check-in, see how all the averages are looking for the Heat and the Celtics. Jason Tatum is currently averaging 23.3 points per game and 10 rebounds per game, or points per game and then 10 rebounds per game and 6 assists, actually. Jason Tatum doing pretty well. Bam Adebayo of the Miami Heat, 22.5 points per game, 10.5 rebounds. He's been playing pretty good. Celtics took game one, Heat took game two, Celtics took game three and four. So I'll be rooting for the Heat to get it done, but the Celtics, they're too dominant. 105 points per game. Heat are only averaging 94 points per game. They've put up under 90 in the last two games. I think the Celtics are probably going to advance tonight. I think that could be my best assumption. Cavaliers and Magic been putting on one of the most competitive series to date. Jarrett Allen, starting center for the Cavaliers. 17 points per game, 13.8 rebounds per game. The former Duke Blue Devil, Paolo Banchero of the Magic, 24.8 points per game, 7.2 rebounds. Not too bad. Cavaliers, despite leading the series, are only averaging 93 points per game. Magic are averaging 101. Rebounds goes to the Magic. Assists go to the Cavaliers for averages. Game one, the Cavaliers took on the road by 15. They were then able, or no, actually at home, I think. Magic were lost by 11 in the next game. After that, at home, I think the Magic took two. Cavaliers won at home. If I'm looking at this correctly, who's the fourth seed? Is the fourth seed the Cavaliers, if that makes sense? Yeah, so actually, every team has won at home. So Magic, they'll need to win Friday to stay alive. So far, it's worked so far playing for Orlando and them. We'll see what happens. That's all I can say for a lot of these games, is we'll just see what happens. Pacers shockingly lead the Bucks. No one saw this coming. I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard have both been MIA. But I will add that the Pacers have had chances to win this, and it didn't go so well. They could have sealed the deal game five the other night, sent them home packing, but the Bucks did not want to go anywhere. Bucks took game one, Pacers took game two, Pacers took game three and four, but the Bucks came out without Giannis or Dame and won by 23 points. Impressive. Chris Middleton doing the most for this Bucks team. 26.8 points per game, 9.4 rebounds. Pascal Siakam, former Toronto Raptor, starting forward for the Pacers. 23 points per game and 9.2 rebounds. Very, very impressive. Who's actually the best rebounder out of the series? It is Pascal with 9. Bobby Portis, 10.6 for the Bucks. He's been doing. I love Bobby Portis. Such a role player. Assist goes to Patrick Beverley, 5.6. Oh, Tyrese Halliburton. Oh my gosh, that 9.2 assist. He's an assist guy. That's what Tyrese Halliburton does the best. He plays for the Pacers. We'll see who advances, or if anyone advances, when they play Thursday at 5:30 Central Time. And the final thing to touch on for the NBA, probably one of the best series we've seen so far between the 2-seeded Knicks and the 7-seeded 76ers. You know what? Knicks took game one, Knicks took game two, 76ers took game three, Knicks took game four, and the 76ers in OT took game five. Jalen Brunson is averaging 34.4 points per game, the most of any player in the playoffs. 4.8 rebounds per game, 8.4 assists, dude does it all. Joel Embiid, 31.8 points per game, 10.4 rebounds. This is a star-studded game. I mean, the averages of points for these teams, 106.8 for the 76ers, 106.4 for the Knicks, separated by 0.4 rebounds. Knicks are averaging 45 a game, which is impressive. I'm rooting for the Knicks. It'd be cool to see them advance, but if I could actually throw out my predictions, I'm going Knicks and Pacers, I'm going Cavs and Celtics. So maybe the Celtics will make the finals this year. We'll see. Their odds are probably the best they've been in any years past compared to, you know, some of them others. But the Celtics are kind of the Bills of the NBA. They kind of choke despite having star players. But actually, Josh Allen doesn't have Stephon Diggs anymore, so we'll see how the Bills do. But that's another tale for another day when it comes to NFL. But with the NBA playoffs also going on, we also have the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. And for the Stanley Cup, we have currently had four teams advance, three in the East this time. So it's kind of the opposite of the NBA. We will check in with the Western Conference first. At the top of our little Stanley Cup bracket, the Dallas Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights are currently tied at 2 games apiece. Been pretty competitive from what my buddies have been telling me. I know they watch almost every single game. Game 1, Vegas took 4-3. Vegas then took Game 2, 3-1, but Stars came back 3-2 in Game 3 and 4-2 in Game 4 as it's all knotted up. Exciting stuff. Stars not doing so well at home, but doing better on the road. Huh. How about that? I think that's how they have it worked out. I don't really know exactly who's home and who's away, but does it tell me who some of the best scorers have been? I would be very curious to know about that. And, you know, the NHL websites, they're all kind of wonky. They're all kind of wonky, if you ask me. They don't. So I can just check in with how the games went. We'll just do that, honestly, because I really want to get to UFC 300. I'm so excited to go over all the fights and drop my predictions. But we do know one team that did advance, and that'll be whoever the Stars and Vegas Golden Knights winner plays, and that is the Colorado Avalanche, who beat the Winnipeg Jets 4-1. Game 1 was an absolute heater, with the Jets winning 7-6. Turns out that would be the only game the Jets would win. Avalanche would take Game 2 5-2, Game 3 6-2, Game 4 5-1, and would close it out yesterday, April 30th, 6-3. Wow. How about that? You win Game 1 and then drop the next 4. That's brutal. But the Avalanche, the Avalanche were the underdog, if you will. They were the 3-seed compared to the 2-seeded Winnipeg Jets, which essentially this was the 4 and 5 seeds if we're looking at the bracket like that, I think. Interesting stuff. I don't know if I like the Avalanche personally. I feel like whenever the Wild play them, the Avalanche win, but good stuff for them. I will probably be rooting for the Stars and Vegas Golden Knights winner, whoever plays the Avalanche. Checking in with our hypothetical 3 and 6 seeds, the Vancouver Canucks taking on the Nashville Predators. Canucks are currently up 3-2 in the series. Canucks took Game 1 4-2. Nashville would come back in Game 2, winning 4-1. Vancouver would then take the next 2, 2-1 and 4-3 before Game 5 came around and the Predators won 2-1. Very impressive. Game 6 goes down tonight at 6 o'clock Central. I'm rooting for the Canucks. I like this Canucks team. There's just something about them. Something fun about a Canuck. Even though I don't really know what a Canuck is. Is it like a whale? Is it like an orca? Is that what it is? I'm going to be honest. I have no idea what it is. But hey, you know what? Good stuff. Actually, I'm honestly not even a hater of the Predators. I kind of like the Predators. So whoever wins that series, I won't be mad. But with it, 3-2 Canucks. And, you know, they'll be in Nashville for Game 6. Actually, we're going Game 7 to the Canucks. That's my prediction. That's exciting. And the winner of that series will play the winner of the Edmonton Oilers and LA Kings, Los Angeles Kings series. Oilers are currently up 3-1. I mean, Edmonton won Game 1 7-4. Los Angeles took Game 2 5-4. Edmonton in Game 3 6-1. Then in Game 4 was actually a 1-0 shutout win for the Edmonton Oilers before, you know, Game 5 going down tonight on the 9th, and then Friday is Game 6, but I don't know if we're going to get there because it's looking like the Oilers are going to close it out. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, that's what my prediction is. A little Oilers and Canucks action in the second round. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. Moving into the East, your top team, the Florida Panthers, they take it 4-1 over the Tampa Bay Lightning. Florida took Game 1, Game 2, Game 3. Tampa Bay avoids a sweep in 4, but Game 5 on Monday, Florida came out 6-1. Pure domination in that matchup. I mean, just insane. Insane. They outscored the Tampa Bay Lightning. Doing some quick math here, 23 goals for the Panthers to only 11 for the Lightning. My goodness, that's just domination. That's why they're the number one team on the eastern side of the bracket. They'll be playing the winner of the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Boston, of course, they've been the favorites to win this, and they had an opportunity. They were up 3-1, but guess what? The Maple Leafs said no. Boston took game one, Leafs took game two. Boston would take 3-4, but yesterday, 2-1 in OT, the Maple Leafs would keep their season alive. We go to game six tomorrow night, Thursday, May 2nd at 7 o'clock on TBS, if you want me to promote the fight, which I will, as I kind of hope the Maple Leafs win. I'm not really like a Boston Bruins hater. I don't really say I'm a hater of any NHL teams, but I do kind of rock with this Maple Leafs team. Auston Matthews, one of the best players in the league. He's exciting. He's a player that I enjoy. I enjoy watching whenever I catch a hockey game. But as far as the series, I don't know. We will have to see. Two teams we do know that will be playing each other are the Rangers and the Hurricanes. Both handled their series accordingly. Rangers sweep the Capitals 4-0. Shame. Shame for Alexander Ovechkin, but you just can't beat the Rangers. Win game 1-3, game 2-1, game 3-2, and they closed it out on Sunday, April 28th, winning 4-2. Just no competition. There's no competition. Rangers are one of the best teams, if not the best team in the East, for a reason. And they'll be taking on the Hurricanes, who are just as formidable as them. Hurricanes beat the Islanders 4-1 in their series. Pretty competitive, I'll say. Islanders avoided the sweep in Game 4, but Hurricanes came out in Game 5, revving to go 6-3. I'll be interested to see who wins that. I'm probably picking the Rangers to advance to the conference championship, the Eastern Conference Final. And as far as the Panthers opponent goes, I think they would probably beat the winner of the Bruins and Maple Leafs. But I will root for the Maple Leafs. They're a fun team to root for. The NHL playoffs rage on. Exciting. I'll have to catch some of the games. I know I've been so busy. I'm actually only going to get busier from here with my job next week and my internship the week after and having class and going to the gym and working this podcast. I mean, it is just a hectic time for Zachary Ruger. But not hectic enough, as we still have to cover the big shablam, the big kabloom, and that is UFC 301. So let's get into it. Let's cover all of our predictions for UFC 301. How about that? The second ever UFC 300 level event. If you know what I'm saying, like, we're now in the 300s. We were in the 100s, the 200s. Now we're in the 300s era. UFC 301 is just a service to Brazilian mixed martial arts fan. The Brazilian card going down at the Genuse Arena in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, May 4th, 2024. How about that? 5-4-24. That's very fascinating. We got 14 fights on the card. I, of course, took some notes, looked at some of their, you know, their histories, if you will. We're going to look back at some of their fights in the UFC, and we are, of course, going to drop our official predictions for every single fight. So, I mean, let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it with our first fight of the evening, which takes place on the prelims in the men's flyweight division as Alessandro No-No Costa takes on Kevin El Gallo Negro Borjas. I don't know what that means. I think that means the black cat. If I know my Spanish correctly. Alessandro Costa, 13-4. Kevin Borjas, 9-2. 5'5 to 5'4 gives Kevin 1 inch in height. He also has 1 inch in reach, 68 inches to 67. Both men stand in the orthodox stance. Let's start with the Brazilian man, Alessandro Costa. Alessandro is 28. He was born in Brazil, but now lives and trains in Mexico. Of his 13 victories, he has 4 KOs and 6 subs. Alessandro debuted in the UFC off of Dana White's Contender Series in 2022. He lost to Amir Albazi in his debut, gained TKO'd in round number 3, but showed some real heart. After that, he would dominate Jimmy Flick last June, TKOing him to a performance bonus, before losing in November to Steve Ursig. So how about that? Alessandro Costa, 1-2 in the UFC. Those two losses are to the current man fighting for a championship and the number 3 contender in the world. That should speak to his level of skill. Alessandro Costa is legit. I understand the losses there, but I mean, come on. Of his 13 victories, 10 finishes. Likes to get some submissions, but also can KO. I'm here for it. His opponent, Kevin El Gallo Negro Borjas, the black cat, 26 years young, from Peru. Of his 9 victories, 8 KOs. His only fight he hasn't finished was actually his Dana White's Contender Series win last August. He did debut in November and got beat by Joshua Van, but Joshua Van is a freaking dog. Landed 156 significant strikes on him. Kevin is probably good. Kevin is honestly probably super legit. Definitely has knockout power, but Alessandro Costa just strikes me as a talented individual. I don't know what's going to happen. We're in Brazil. We're probably riding with a lot of Brazilians tonight. Give me Alessandro Costa. I don't know what method. I might even say decision just to do it. But Alessandro Costa, I've liked this guy every time I've seen him fight, and I've seen all three of his UFC fights. So there's that. Alessandro, no Costa. I'm picking you over Kevin Borjas. And plus, who lives in Peru? Who lives in Peru? Is it Machu Picchu in Peru? That's all I know about it. Next fight up, we head to the men's lightweight division as one of my favorite unranked fighters, Ishmael Moreta, takes on Vink from Hell Pichel. How about that? Ishmael Bonfim, 19-4 professionally, Vink Pichel, 14-3. 5'10 to 5'8 gives Vink 2 inches in height. He also has 1 inch in reach, 72-71, and both men stand in that orthodox fighter stance. Let's start with Ishmael Bonfim, of course, 28 years old from Brazil. Of his 19 victories, 9 KOs, and 4 submissions. Dude's been a rocket ever since he joined the UFC last January in 2023. Kicked it off with one of the best knockouts of the year. A knockout of the year contender when he got performance bonus. Flying knee over Terrence McKinney. Face planted him. After that, he fought in July, got rear naked chokeholded by Benoit Saint Denis. Was a little ambitious in that fight, you know, getting too ahead of himself. I'll say that was definitely something that led to the loss. Ishmael's good. I mean, his finishes speaks for himself. So he actually has a brother, Gabriel Bonfim, who'll be looking to get a win back. I think in June, Gabriel fights, but Ishmael, he loves the strike. He loves the land takedowns. He's a fun fighter. I'm excited to see this. His opponent, Vink from Hell Pichel, is 41 years old from California. Of his 14 victories, he's gotten 8 TKOs. Look, Vink is 41, been in the UFC since 2012. This is actually, I don't even know what stint it is. I think he left the UFC for a while, you know. Debuted in 2012, got slam finished, then came back in 2014, went on a little four-fight win streak before getting arm triangled by Gregor Gilseppe. In 2018, we got wins in 2019, 2020, and 2021. Last time he fought was April 2022, lost a unanimous decision to Mark Madsen. Yeah, it's safe to say Ishmael Bonfim is going to do nasty things to Vink Pichel. I don't know how, you know, I honestly know he's got some knockout power. So we're going to say round one KO for Ishmael Bonfim. We're ambitious, we like to pick it, and I think no matter what method it is, Ishmael Bonfim is getting the W in this one. I just don't see 41-year-old Vink Pichel who hasn't fought in 2 years getting a win. Following that, we get our first women's fight of the night as Dione the Witch Barbosa takes on Ernesta Heavy-Handed Karchakayat. Holy, that is a mouthful of a name. Dione Barbosa, 6-2. Ernesta is 5-0-1. 5 wins, 0 losses, 1 draw. 5'9 to 5'6 gives Ernesta 3 inches in height. She also has 5 inches in reach, 71 to 66. Wow, both women stand in the orthodox stance. Wowza, Ernesta, got the height on ya. Dione the Witch Barbosa, I don't like your nickname. I don't like witches. I don't like witches, Diona, okay? 31 years old from Brazil, 3 submissions of her 6 wins, and she's currently on a little 3-fight win streak. Fought on Dana White's Contender Series last September, got an armbar win in round 1. Not too bad from Dione Barbosa, if I'm being honest. That is pretty impressive. That is some impressive stuff. I will say, you know, the reach is definitely something that I'm going to take into account as she takes on Ernesta Heavy-Handed Karakite? I don't even know how you say that. 25 years young from Lithuania, of her 5 victories, 2 KOs. She won on Season 7 of Dana White's Contender Series in September, getting a split decision win over Carly Judice. Ernesta landed 184 significant strikes in that fight. She's got the height. She's got the reach. Give me Ernesta in this one. I don't like Dione's nickname either. I think the reason her nickname's the Witch is another reason I'm not picking her. Plus, I can't pick every single Brazilian fighter tonight. That never works out. Think about Canadians back in January. They all lost. Every Canadian lost that night. So, hopefully not every Brazilian loses tonight, because we're going to be picking a lot of Brazilians. Especially in our next one, as we head to the men's lightweight division again, as Mauricio Rufi takes on Jamie Mularkey. Mauricio Rufi, 9-1. 9-1. Jamie Mularkey, 17-7. 6'5", 11", gives Mularkey 1 inch in height. And Ruffy gets 1 inch in reach, 75 to 74 inches. And of course, both men stand in the orthodox fighter stance, throwing that right hand forward. Let's start with Mauricio Ruffy, however you want to say his name. Fought on Damage Contender Series in October. Got a win, the third round three TKO with 15 seconds left, beating Raymond Magomedov. The 30-year-old is, of course, from Brazil, and of his 9 victories, 9 KOs. Currently rides a 4-fight win streak. This guy's legit. 100% finish rate. We love to see it. And clearly he's being set up to get the win here as he takes on the Australian Jamie Mularkey. 29 years old, actually. I thought he was older. Of his 17 victories, 10 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been knocked out 5 times. Very fascinating. This is obviously set up for Ruffy to get it done. And Mularkey, he's been in the UFC since 2019. Not the most impressive run. I mean, he's 5-5, so this is probably a make or break to stay at the UFC. He's had Fight of the Nights against Brad Riddell in front of an Australian crowd. He's knocked out Kama Worthy in 49 seconds. He's TKO'd Devontae Smith to a performance bonus. He's been knocked out cold by Jalen Turner. He's had a fight of the day against Michael Johnson, beating young up-and-comers like Francisco Prado. He's beaten John McDessie. Last time, though, in December, he did get TKO'd by Nasrat Haqparast in 1:44. So I do think that'll play some implications. Ruffy, he likes to get the TKOs. He likes to get done. Yeah, we're riding with Ruffy in this 100% finish rate of his 9 victories, 9 KOs. Of course, I'm going round 2 KO. I'm sorry, Jamie. Your chin's just not all that. I understand you're good. I understand you're a legit competitor. But, you know, I just know you're not up to quality with this new guy, Mauricio Ruffy. But as I've been seeing, guys coming from Dana White's Contender Series have not been doing as well as they used to. We'll see if Ruffy can change that around. Keeping in the lightweight division, we head to the next matchup where Joaquim Neto BJJ Silva takes on Dracar Close. Joaquim Silva is 13-5. Dracar Close, 14-2-1. Only 2 losses. 5'9" to 5'8" gives Dracar Close 1 inch in height. He also has 1 inch in reach, 70 inches to 69. Our first southpaw of the night is Joaquim Silva. Dracar Close, of course, is an orthodox fighter, if I can say it correctly. Man, who should we start with first? Let's start with Joaquim Silva. The 35-year-old is from Brazil, a Brazilian native. Of course he is. Of his 13 victories, 7 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 5 losses, though, 3 of them he's been knocked out in, which isn't too pretty. Last fought in December, getting a unanimous decision win over Clay Guida. Before that, though, in June, he had been TKO'd by Armin Sarukian. Joaquim Silva, been in the UFC since 2015. I mean, I'd say some of his biggest fights probably was against Armin Sarukian. You know, dude hasn't done much. He's gotten a flying knee against Jesse Ronson in 2022. He's gotten a win over Jared Gordon, a little TKO fight of the night in 2018, but nothing as of late from Joaquim Silva. Unfortunately, I hate to say that. Unfortunately, nothing's been going on for him. However, for Dracar Close, the 36-year-old from Arizona, who has 6 KOs in his 14 victories, has been on a little bit of a heater. I mean, dude debuted in 2017. Got a little 2-fight win streak before losing to David Timur. Won all little 3-fight win streak, which included wins for Lando Venata, Bobby Green, and Christos Gagos before having one of the craziest round 2s I've seen in my life. And the round 2 only lasted a minute when he got knocked out by Beneil Dariush in 2020. But that was a fun fight. There's a lot of things that went on with that. He took 2 years off, came back in 2022, got a round 2 performance of the night TKO of Brandon Jenkins. Beat Rafa Garcia in July of 2022, and last fought in December, where he got a 1:41 slam finish of Joe Selecki. Dracar Close is coming in. He's looking to get it done, and give me that round 3 Dracar Close TKO. I absolutely love that pick. Dracar Close is a fun fighter. I mean, come on, his only loss since 2018 is to Beneil Dariush, and that was 4 years ago. Yeah, I think he's pretty good. I think he's a pretty good fighter. I like his skill set. We can say that. I like Dracar Close. He's one of the better unranked lightweights. And you go on a little 4-fight win streak here. Could easily get a ranked opponent next. We'll see what happens. Dropping down to featherweight for our next matchup. We have one of the best matchups you're going to see on the prelims, if not the whole card. As Jean Lord Silva takes on William Jaguar Gomez. This is high-level fighting. Jean Silva, 12-2. William Gomez, 13-2. A crazy fight. 5-inch height advantage for William Gomez, 6 foot to 5'7". Also has 4 inches in reach, 73 inches to 69. Second southpaw of the night is William Gomez. Orthodox stance, of course, for Gene Silva. Wow. Gene Silva, 27 years old. He is a Brazilian native. He's currently on a 9-fight win streak, and of his 12 victories, 9 KOs and 2 submissions. Came onto the scene in January, actually. He finished Weston Wilson in round number 1 with a knockout punch. He had one in September on Dana White's Contender Series against Kevin Vallejos. But man, Gene Silva, he is legit as they come. He's intense, but this is a significant height disadvantage. I'll say that for certain. Weston Wilson is, Weston Wilson was 6'1", so Gene Silva did have a disadvantage there, and he was still able to knock him out. But William Gomez is a bit different than Weston Wilson, whatever bum he beat. William Gomez is 26 years young from France. He's on an 11-fight win streak, and of his 13 victories, 7 KOs, 1 submission. Debuted in September 2022 in France, beat Jarno Ahrens. Came back in April 2023, beat Francis Marshall. Last fought in September, finished Yanis Gamore in round number 3 with a kick. I know he's good. I know William Gomez is good. It's just tough. Is very tough because Gene Silva is also good. This is probably the one fight where I am not as confident on. I kind of mess with both guys. I kind of enjoy watching both of them, if I'm being honest. So, man, do I really have to throw a pick out here? Do I have to? You know, there's something about Gene Silva beating William Gomez before. I know he's talented. I mean, William hasn't fought anyone like Gene Silva. I'll say that for something else as well. At the same time, Gene Silva, I haven't seen too much of him. His one fight I saw of him was utter domination, so we can't really say he's been dealt with much adversity. But we got an 11-fight win streak against a 9-fight win streak, a Brazilian against a France boy. It's up in the air. We're going to say, at the moment, this is fight of the night, but William Gomez, I'm going to say, takes it by decision. Split decision or something. We're going to go with William Gomez, but this is going to be a fun fight nonetheless. And when I do my recap on Monday, presumably, I'll be giving props to whoever wins this one. Going back up to the lightweight division. We've just been doing lightweight and featherweight fluctuations so much. Back in the lightweight division, this is another banger. This is two of the best unranked fighters you're going to be seeing in a fat freaking minute. Elvez Brenner takes on he's back, guys. He's back. Mytykhebek Orelbay. I love his name, Mytykhebek Orelbay. So fun. Elvez Brenner, 16-3. Mytykhebek, 12-1 with one draw. Both men are 5'10". 2 inches in reach for Mytybek, 74 inches to 72, and both men stand in the orthodox stance. Let's kick it off with one of the most powerful punchers that I've seen. Elvez Brenner, 26 years young, from Brazil, currently on a little, what did I even write here? I think I meant to write a 7-fight win streak or something. It's, or maybe it was 11. I don't even know what win streak he's on. My notes are all screwy all over the place. But of his 16 victories, he's gotten, and I repeat, incredible. 3 KOs, 11 submissions, 14 of 16 wins. He's finished. So if I'm doing some math, 7 of 8 fights. 7 out of 8, was that like 80, 90%? He finishes a lot of his fights. And he's actually never been finished. All 3 of his losses are by decision. Debuted last February, getting a split decision win over Zubara Tukhagov, but it was in July where he came onto the scene, winning a fight of the night and knocking out Guram Kulaze in round number 3. He was back in November and knocked Kanan Krueski out cold in 4 minutes. I mean, face planted him, got himself a 50K performance bonus. Elvez Brenner is so fun to watch, and he's going to feed off of this Brazilian crowd. But he's fighting a tough opponent. He's fighting a grappler as he takes on Mytykhebek Orelbay, 26 years young from Kyrgyzstan. Of his 12 wins, he has 6 KOs and 5 subs, so he's only ever not finished one fight. And he's on a 7-fight win streak, might I add as well. Had a great debut in November on short notice, submitting Eros Medic, who we just saw melt Tim Means with an uppercut, oh my goodness, last Saturday. Hit a neck crank on him, landed 7 takedowns. Eros looked good on the feet, which I think will play into Elvez Brenner's favorability in this fight, but the grappling is going to be what Elvis has to look out for. So we are going to pick Elvez Brenner. I am an Elvez Brenner fan, if you will. But this will be tough. Mytybek is so good. He's so talented. But we're in Brazil. I think, you know, the fact Elvez Brenner is really good submissions, he can reverse stuff. But I'm going to say Elvez Brenner ends this on the feet in round number 2 with a little round 2 TKO. We'll see what occurs. Obviously, anything can occur, but at the moment, I would like to ride with Elvis Brenner. Heading into our second to last prelim of the night, we head to the women's strawweight division, and we finally have some ranked opponents, I believe. I believe Karolina Kowalski is ranked. Yes, she's ranked number 13th in the division as Karolina Kowalski takes on Yasmin Lucindo. Karolina Kowalski, 16-7. Yasmin is 15-5. Both women are 5'3 and 2 inches in height for Yasmin, 66 inches, 64. Both women, orthodox stance. Cool. The 13th-ranked Karolina Kowalski currently rides a 4-fight win streak. The 38-year-old is from Poland. Of her 16 victories, though, only 1 KO and 3 subs. Yeah, she rarely finishes fights. 4 finishes in 16 professional bouts. And she's been around a while. She has been in the UFC for some time now. How about 2015? This is year 9 for Karolina. I mean, she's fought in Johanna Jędrzejczyk, the former champion. I can't believe I forgot how to say her last name. Shields wins over Rose Namajunas. I mean, Felice Herrig she's beaten. She was once on a 5-fight losing streak, and she saved her job by getting her, I think, first UFC finish over Felice Herrig in June 2022. Got a decision win in November 2022, May 2023, and October 2023. Her striking has been looking phenomenal as of late, and when her opponent brings the striking, she can land takedowns. Karolina is fun to watch, and from Poland, too. Wonder if she's friends with Han Blachowicz. As she takes on the 22-year-old from Brazil, Yasmin Lucindo. Of her 15 victories, she has 8 KOs and 3 subs. Now, I won't lie, of her 5 losses, 3 of those are actually by submission, but she hasn't been finished in like 5 years, so that's a good sign. She's been fighting since she was 17 years old, which is crazy. Currently on a little 2-fight win streak, went 2-0 in 2023. Last time she fought was August. Got a round 2 arm triangle, performance of the night, finish over Pollyanna Viana. Very impressive stuff. I'm obviously going with the younger girl. I'm obviously going with the younger woman here in Yasmin Lucindo. 22 years old versus, you know, the 38-year-old. Karolina can easily pull the veteran card and get done, but we're going to say Yasmin gets a round 2 submission. I like it. I like my prediction. I like Yasmin Lucindo. She's a fun fighter to watch. I never forgot when she fought, who was it? I think it was Yasmin Jaraguay at UFC San Diego in August of 2022. One of my favorite fights of all time. It was on the main card for some reason. Everyone was like, why is this fight on the main card? And it did not disappoint. It was absolutely electric, and we love electric fights. With that, we head into our final prelim of the night, and this could easily be on the main card, as Jack Tank Short takes on Joe Henderson Tubaro Brito. This is going to be a banger of a matchup. Jack Shore 17-1. Joe Henderson Brito 16-3. Both men are 5'8. 1-inch reach separation, 72-71 for Joe Henderson, so not that different. And both men stand in an orthodox stance. This is as close as it comes. Let's start off with Joe Henderson Brito, because this guy is a killer. 29 years old from Brazil. Of his 16 victories, 6 KOs, 8 subs, currently off 4-fight win streak. Round of applause for Joe Henderson Brito. He actually owns a win over Diego Lopez, fun fact. Only loss in the UFC was to Bill Algeo on short notice in January of 2022. After that, I mean, he's knocked out Andre Feely in round number 1. He submitted Lucas Alexander in round number 1. He has knocked out Weston Wilson in round number 1. And most recently in November, he submitted Jonathan Pierce in round number 2. Joe Henderson Brito is a killer. I mean, come on. What is there not to love about this guy? He brings the energy. He brings the attention. He calls for big fights. And he takes anyone thrown at him. I love this guy. Now his opponent, Jack Shore, is as tough as they come. 17-1 record, as I mentioned. 29 years old, from Wales. His family actually owns a gym in Wales, which is like what he's known for. Like I said, 17 victories, 4 KOs, and 9 submissions. This guy's a finisher when he has the ability to. He's so fun. Started out his career 16-0. I mean, in the UFC, he got wins over Ludwig Shalonen, Timur Valev, Noelen Hernandez. For losing his first professional bout in July of 2022 to Ricky Simone, but he moved up in weight to featherweight, finished Makwan Amerikani round number 2. Happy to see it. Now he's back, but Jack Shore, you sadly have to fight one of the killers of this division. I'm so sorry, Jack Shore. Joe Henderson Brito is going to do things to you that are actually illegal in a majority of the 50 states. Give me Joe Henderson Brito round 2 TKO by murder. Dranderson Brito is a killer, and this is going to be, can Jack Shore get this to the ground? If Jack Shore can get this to the ground, he's good, but at the same time, we saw Johnson Pierce bringing his fight against Dranderson Brito to the ground, and he got submitted. So you have to be careful when you fight absolute killers like Dranderson Brito, who is essentially always one fight away from getting a ranked opponent. I love to see it. With that, we head into our main card, and these prelims are absolutely electric. I'll say the big fights, I mean, the big performers I'm looking out for are Ishmael Bonfim, without a doubt, Mauricio Ruffy, Drakkar Klose. The Gene Silva-William Gomez fight is going to be incredible. Elvis Brenner and Matei Pekarabai are going to be incredible. Yasmin Lucindo has a huge opportunity to break into the rankings, and Jack Shore and Dranderson Brito is a perfect way to cap it off. But of course, we have the main card, which is just beautiful, might I add. I mean, we got ranked opponents here and there. People are hating on this, but it's just because it's not pay-per-view worthy. It's not pay-per-view worthy. If this was a fight night, I'd think it would serve a better purpose. But as when it comes to, I want to pay $80 for this, no. And I won't pay $80. I probably won't even be able to watch this, unfortunately. Let's talk about it. First fight on the main card, we head to the men's middleweight division as number 14-ranked Kyle Barallo takes on number 13th-ranked Paul Craig. This is going to be electric. A great way to open up the card. Paul Bear Drew Craig. Kyle the natural Barallo. Paul is 17-7-1. Kyle is 15-1 with one no contest. 6'3 to 5'10 gives Paul 5 inches in height, and he actually has 1 inch in reach, 76 to 75. Southpaw stands for Kyle Barallo. Orthodox for Paul Bear Drew Craig. Let's start with the 13th-ranked Paul Craig, former light heavyweight fighter. You know, he recently dropped down to middleweight. Has since gone 1-1 in the middleweight division, but, you know, he's still a fun fighter nonetheless. Paul Craig, 36 years old, from Scotland. Of his 17 victories, he has 17 finishes, 4 KOs and 13 subs, 100% finish rate. Expect this fight to end early, and I mean early, early, early. A lot of his fights end in round one, which is something we'd love to see around here. Paul Craig, been in the UFC since 2016. I mean, he holds losses to Khalil Roundtree Jr., wins over Magomed Ankalaev, losses to Jimmy Crute, wins over Kenny and Chukani, lost to Alonzo Menfield, win over Shogun Rua, tie against Shogun Rua, win over Jamal Hill, win over Nikita Krylov. You know, of course, he lost to Jai Walker last year. That was tough. Did drop down, beat Andre Munez. Last fought in November, got destroyed by Brendan Allen, but finally he gets a tough opponent in Kyle Barallo, who's not a top five guy. Because, I mean, Brendan Allen's number six, essentially could be the number five. It's not going to be easy as he takes on the natural Kyle Barallo. Kyle, of course, 31 years old, from Brazil. 4 KOs and 4 subs make up his 15 victories, and he's on a 14-fight winning streak. This guy hasn't lost since his second fight. I mean, what are you, what? He's fun. Fought on Dana White's Contender Series twice, didn't get a contract the first time despite winning. Came back in October 2021, got a minute 41 knockout. Was like, are you happy now, Dana? And Dana was like, heck yeah, I'm happy. First three UFC fights, all decisions. Kind of used his grappling before he got a big finish over Michael Okejcek in April. Got one of the biggest wins of his career against Abus Magomedov in November. The finishing ability hasn't been there, I'll say, which is unfortunate to see. And I could easily see him getting caught against Paul Craig. Very realistic. But 14-fight win streak, he seems determined. He fights with a purpose, gives glory to Jesus, fights for his family. I got a ride with Kyle Barallo. I was about to say Paul Craig, but no, we're going with Kyle Barallo. I'm not really set on his finishing abilities, so we'll say by decision, but on the feet, I always favor someone against Paul Craig. Paul Craig just doesn't have the best record when it comes to standing and striking. I think that's one of his bigger downfalls, but I mean, his submission speaks for itself. 9 submissions? I mean, what in the world? 13 submissions. My bad. I was reading someone else's submission record. Nothing. Freaking 13 submissions. What? What a jiu-jitsu master. Do not go into his guard, Kyle Barallo. I warn you, don't do it. After that, we had the men's middleweight division. Actually, we're already in the middleweight division. We're staying in the middleweight division. Our last middleweight fight of the night as Michelle Demolador? I don't even know what his nickname is. Pereira takes on Ior Doulis Potera. Michelle Pereira, 30-11. Ior Potera, 20-5. 6'3 to 6'1 gives Ior 2 inches in height and 2 inches in reach, 75 inches to 73. Southpaw stands for that left hand for Ior, orthodox for Michelle Pereira. Let's start with the man, the myth, the legend, one of the most entertaining fighters on the roster, Michelle Pereira. He's currently on, and I kid you not, a 7-fight win streak. The 30-year-old from Brazil has 11 KOs and 7 submissions. of his 30 victories. He was supposed to fight Mahmoud Muradov, which was going to be a killer fight, but Mahmoud pulled off. Ayrol Patera was supposed to fight Shahmagomedov. Instead, pulled out of that fight to come join this fight. We appreciate you. And Michelle, I mean, been in the UFC since 2019, debuted with a round one, just under 2 minute flying knee over Dane Roberts. After that, lost the fight of the night to Tristan Connolly, where he kind of gassed, was doing some crazy things in front of an electric Canadian crowd. And then Diego Sanchez, you know, he unfortunately got DQ'd when he hit him with an illegal knee on accident. Since then, hasn't lost. Finished him, Imadov, was slapping him in that fight. I mean, wins over Kyle Williams, Nico Price, Andre Filho, fight of the night against Santiago Ponzinibbio, knocking out Andre Petroski in a minute, submitting Michael Okojasek in March in a minute. He is so entertaining. In his last three fights, two performance bonuses and a fight that he's made $150K in bonus money in his last three fights. He is entertainment. No, tough going though. Like I said, it keeps going up from here. Mahmoud was going to be tough. Ayrol Patera will be tough. Ayrol Patera, 27 years young, from Ukraine. Of his 20 victories, 9 KOs and 7 submissions. Of his 5 losses, though, 4 of those he's been KO'd in. I will say that's notable. He is 2-3 in the UFC, 1 on Dana White's Contender Series in 2021, debuted, got TKO'd, snapping some ridiculous win streak. It was like a 17-fight win streak or something. Then got TKO'd by Carlos Ulberg in May, got finished by Rodolfo Bellotto in December, but came back in February and beat Robert Baziak. So he's back in the win column, he's back getting it done, and we'll see how he does. But he's not going to succeed, as Michelle Pereira is going to knock him out in round number one. I can you, Michelle Pereira is on the run of a lifetime. It's not stopping here. If he wins here, he has to be given. He has to be given a freaking ranked opponent. He's on a 7-fight win streak in the UFC. One of the biggest in the UFC. I'm excited for it. I'm here for it. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. But I say that for like everything. Like, we'll see how it goes, because that's all you can say sometimes. But Michelle Pereira is an absolute dog. Absolute dog. After that, we head up and wait to the men's light heavyweight division, as number 10 ranked Anthony Smith will defend his spot against the undefeated Vitor Petrino. Anthony Lionheart Smith, 37-19. Oh my goodness. 56 professional bouts. He's been around a while. Vitor Petrino, 11-0. You know, he's kind of new to this. He's kind of new to this, if I'm being honest. This is a little fighting game. 6'4 to 6'2 gives Anthony 2 inches in height. Vitor has 1 inch in reach, 77 inches to 76. And both men stand in an orthodox stance. How about that? Let's start us off with the number 10 ranked Anthony Lionheart Smith, former title challenger, notable main eventer. He's been around a while. 35 years old, from Nebraska. Of his 37 wins, 19 by KO, 15 by sub. 34 of his 37 wins, he's finished. Incredible. Now, of his 19 losses, 10 times he's been KO'd, 5 times he's been subbed. You rarely see an Anthony Smith fight go the distance, which is weird because of his last 3 fights, 2 have gone the distance. Anthony Smith, been in the UFC since 2011. I mean, who is he fought? This guy's fought Cesar Ferreira. He's fought Hector Lombard, Thiago Santos, Rashad Evans, Risa Ruhl, Volkan Ozdemir, John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson, he holds a win over Glover Teixeira, Alexander Rakic, I mean, Devin Clark, Ryan Spann, the list goes on and on and on. As of late, I mean, 1-3 in his last 4 losses to Johnny Walker, Magomed Ankalaev, a split decision which is debated over Ryan Spann, and most recently in December got brutally finished by Khalil Roundtree Jr. I mean, whoo, you rarely see someone getting knocked out that bad. I mean, he got hit with a punch, really stumbled backwards, fell. Khalil Roundtree Jr. raised his fist in the air like he was going to land the final blow, and the ref was like, get away, get away. It was brutal. It was brutal. And Anthony Smith, you know, he's a legend, always on the desk, thinks he can take on anyone, likes to prove he can take on anyone. And we'll see if he can take on the undefeated Brazilian fighter, Vitor Petrino, 26 years young, 7 KOs and 1 submission of his 11 victories. So far, 4-0 in the UFC. Got a knockout on Dana White's Contender Series. Came in March, had a fight of the night against Anton Turkalgic. In July of 2023, arm triangled Marcin Percini out. In November, knocked out Modestus. Recently fought in March, pretty boring performance against Tyson Pedro. Leaned on the grappling, 3 takedowns, once in every round, just holding control. So I will say that is a bit of a downfall. But Vitor is still fun. He's electric, and we're going to pick him. Of course, we're picking the undefeated up-and-comer against the guy in Anthony Smith who always beats young up-and-comers. It's just what we do. I am going to say by round, we'll say round 1 sub, just to catch everyone off guard. No one's going to be picking Vitor Petrino round 1 sub. You heard it here on the Surprise Jet Podcast. That's the prediction we are going with. you know, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. If Vitor can win, it's going to skyrocket him from irrelevancy to getting a top 10 guy, which is just incredible when you're at his level. I really like to point that out. Our co-main event. That's where we're at next. And this one is so, so fun. Bantamweight fight, Jonathan Martinez and the great, the legend. He's returning after a two-year hiatus, Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo, man. Jose Aldo in the flesh, back where he belongs. It is incredible. It is absolutely incredible that we are getting a Jose Aldo fight. Jonathan Dragon Martinez, 19-4 professionally. Jose Aldo, 31-8. Jonathan has 1 inch in height. Both men have a 70-inch reach. Southpaw stance for Jonathan, orthodox for Jose. Let's get into it. Jonathan Martinez, currently ranked number 12 in the men's bantamweight division. Oh my goodness. Currently on a 6-fight win streak with 2 finishes, including a big one over Adrian Yanez back in October, leg kick TKO'd him. I mean, Jonathan holds wins in this win streak over Saeed Nurmagomedov, Cub Swanson, Vince Morales. He's beaten Thomas Almeida, Frankie Sands. I mean, he's fought a lot of tough guys. Last loss was to Davy Grant in March of 2021. It's been a while since we saw Jonathan Martinez not get his hand raised. And then that kind of just speaks to his abilities. 30 years old from Texas. I mean, this win streak's been incredible. Of his 19 victories, he's gotten 9 KOs and 2 subs. I'm happy to see it. Happy to watch Jonathan Martinez fight, but I'm more happy to see Jose Aldo, the former men's featherweight champion, bantamweight title challenger. I mean, he's incredible. Jose Aldo is incredible. 37 years old from Brazil. Of his 31 victories, 15 KOs, he's actually gotten 2 subs. Of his 8 losses, though, 4 by KO, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, as much as his last fight against Merab Dvavishvili in August of 2022, he lost that fight, you know, defended 16 takedowns, but didn't do much in return. In 2023, he had 3 boxing bouts. 2 of those he won, 1 of them was a draw, so he's been active. And, you know, I mean, wins over Rob Font, Pedro Munhoz, Marlon Vera. He's as game as they come. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He's had so many title fights in his life. It's been absolutely immaculate. I'm happy to see it. And I would be remiss if I did not pick Jose Aldo. I know Jonathan Martinez is probably primed to win, but I got to go with Jose Aldo. We'll say decision. We'll say decision for him. But I got to pick the legend. Obviously, he looks kind of old, but Jonathan Martinez, not the biggest name. Obviously, beating a guy like Jose Aldo would propel you to stardom, but we got to ride with the legend, which is Jose Aldo. So that'll do it. That'll do it. That'll be our pick for the co-main event, Jose Aldo, to break into the bantamweight rankings, which would be incredible. I'd be happy to see it. I do love him. I do love you, Jose. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our main event of the evening. And it's here. It's ready. The number 10 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, your current men's flyweight champion, Alexander Pantoja. It's even nicknamed the Cannibal Pantoja. Takes on the number 10 ranked flyweight in the world, Steve Astro Boy Usyk. There's no one else to fight him. There's no one else to fight him. They didn't have a main event, and he was coming off a legendary KO, so they give Astro Boy Steve Usyk the title shot. I love it. I love it. Alexander Pantoja, 27-5. Steve Usyk, 12-1. 5'5 to 5'8 gives Steve 3 inches in height. He also has 1 inch reach, 68 to 67. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Let's get into it. Alexander Pantoja, your champion, the reigning defending champion, 34 years old from Brazil. 8 KOs and 10 subs of his 27 victories. Of his 5 losses, he's never been finished. Currently on a 5-fight win streak. He's fun. He's feisty. Wins over Manel Cape, Brandon Royval, Alex Perez, Brandon Moreno. I mean, come on. 2 title fights so far in 2023. Won them both. Won the belt. Defended the belt. He's here to stay. Mind you, his losses in the UFC are to Askar Askarov, Devin Figueiredo, Dustin Ortiz, legends of the game. So he's clearly good. He's clearly freaking talented. But, you know, this is one of those fights where it's like, clearly you have the dominant champion. He has all the skills. We've seen it. He can strike. He can grapple. But there's one thing he doesn't have, and that is the legendary hands of Steve Astro Boy Usyk, 28 years old from Australia, currently riding a 7-fight win streak. He's 3-0 in the UFC. Of his 12 victories, 2 KOs and 6 submissions, he is coming to do the impossible. He's coming to do the impossible. No one's done it before. No one's ever beaten. No one's ever done this before, been the number 10 guy and beaten the champion. Steve Usyk is going to be the first man. Debuted on short notice, had a performance of the night win over David Jork. Then beat Alessandro Costa, as we mentioned earlier. Then in March, not but 2 months ago, knocked Matt Schnell out cold in round two with a punch. I mean, dropped him cold, got 50K. It's just, what do I do? What do I do? Do I pick Pantoa? Do I pick Steve Ersig? What do I do? Do I crush the dreams of everyone? I don't know, guys. I honestly don't know. I think I'm going to be honest. I think I got to go with Alexander Pantoa. You know what? Steve Ersig, everyone's counting him out. Everyone's saying he can't do it. So we're going to pick Steve Ersig to do the impossible. We're going to root for Steve Ersig. He's one of the biggest underdogs of the year. He is put in this spot to lose. And the last time someone did that, their name was Sean Strickland, and they beat Israel Adesanya. That's what we're going to say. Steve Ersig, the number 10 guy in the world, is going to beat the pound-for-pound king of the flyweights, Alexander Pantoa. Man, we'll see what happens. We'll see what goes down. But yeah, we're going to ride with Steve Ersig. We'll do it. We're picking Jose Aldo. We're picking Vitor Petrino, Steve Ersig, Kyle Barallo, Michelle Pereira. It's a mix of some legends, mix of some up-and-comers. I think that's what kind of makes this fun and feisty. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, that'll do it for our UFC 301 predictions. We'll be back next week with all brand new stuff, brand new topics, stuff to debate, if you will. But as for now, you know, I want everyone to just keep going in life. Big things are coming. If you pray, if you work hard, if you dedicate yourself to something, you can achieve. Achieve, conceive, and believe. I think that's what Luke Rockhold said in that 2016 UFC press conference. Ladies and gentlemen, I will catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Have a good one.